Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson.
And I'm Luann Crane. And Doctor, I know you have something weighing pretty heavily on your heart today that you want to share with listeners.
Well, I certainly do, because I'm so deeply concerned about the state of the American family. As our listeners undoubtedly know, several weeks ago, the state of New York legalized same-sex marriage, and then they went out into the streets to proclaim their victory over the traditional family. Marriage is under siege today, and I'm sorry to say that many Christians, including some pastors and other religious leaders, are running scared today. They're afraid to talk about marriage. Mm. Some of them are intimidated by homosexual activists and the left-wing media that's threatening those who would speak for biblical truth. Mm. And even some of our brothers and sisters in Christ are throwing up their hands in despair. But I could not possibly disagree more. Now is the time to fight for what we care about, what we believe, because what's at stake is the very survival of the family.
Well, Doctor, this is a topic that you've never backed away from. You spoke on this issue several years ago before an enthusiastic crowd of several thousand gathered here in Colorado Springs. I know because my husband and I were in the audience, and it was a powerful message. I don't know, Ryan, if I've ever heard your dad articulate his defense of marriage as strongly as I heard him that evening.
Well, Luann, it is a very, very powerful message, and I know our listeners are anxious to hear it. So let's get to it now. Here you are, Dad, just a few years ago, speaking on marriage.
I got to tell you that what's been going on in here for 30 minutes, that the radio programs and the televised portion may not have been heard by everybody around the country, but I'm telling you what's going on here with people standing and praising the Lord and singing together and calling on Him. I tell you, if I were the devil, it would scare me to death. And he is not welcome here. We're here for a purpose tonight, and I am so encouraged and I'm so thankful. We do stand at a crossroads. I have been discouraged because I'm in the thick of it in Washington and elsewhere, and I've seen that the Congress is doing nothing, and I've seen that the forces arrayed against us are enormous, and it just seems like a bridge too far. It seems like a mountain too high to climb. And I have been chastised by the Lord for that. He is still on the throne. And I believe we're here to claim victory tonight. And I'm delighted to be part of it. The institution of marriage has been the bedrock of civilizations for 5,000 years. Our critics particularly say that marriage is an outmoded Christian notion that's outlived its time. Hardly. Every civilization in the history of the world has had as its foundation the family. And I'm talking Asia and Africa and Europe and North America and South America and Antarctica. Every place where men and women have taken root, marriage has been the foundation. And it has been blessed by God. We as Christians and Jews know where that foundation came from, because it goes all the way back to the beginning, all the way back to the Garden of Eden. In the second chapter of Genesis, Genesis 2:24, where he said, "For this reason, a man shall leave father and mother and shall be united to his wife, and they shall be one flesh." That was the foundation of the family. It came straight from the Creator Himself. And God does not make mistakes. He has... Thank you. He has ordained three institutions: the family, the church, and the government. The family was the first of the three. right from the beginning. Are we now going to throw it on the ash heap of history?
No.
Do you have the courage to fight for it? This is a critical moment in our history, and I believe I see good things happening. It is God's divine plan. Now, something that, a question that you're going to hear if you step out and defend marriage, you're going to hear this in sophisticated places, you're going to hear it from neighbors, you'll hear it from everybody. The question is, so what? Why does it matter? Why does it hurt you for someone, two men or two women who love each other, to get married and move in to the neighborhood? Why does that matter? That question is being asked all over the place as though each person who asked it had thought it up himself. It's part of the mantra. It's part of the effort to put those who believe in marriage back on their heels. But it has an answer. It has many answers to it. I was asked that question Monday night on Hannity and Combs. Alan Combs asked me that very question and pressed me on it because they think there is no answer. But there are good answers to it. And there are 11 that I have outlined in a little book. I've never done this before in my life. I've never held up a book that I've written as though I were promoting it. The title of it is Marriage Under Fire, Why We Must Win This Battle. Because this idea of two men and two women has far-reaching implications that touch every dimension of society. And I'm not going to be able to mention even all of them that are in this book. But the first one, and the one you must understand, is that traditional marriage between one man and one woman cannot coexist with homosexual marriage. It will destroy the family. And we don't have to guess about that, because it's already known in the Scandinavian countries, which began experimenting with homosexual unions in the 90s, have now seen the destruction of the family in Scandinavian countries. In Norway, in certain places in Norway, 80% of the children are born out of wedlock. In all Scandinavian countries, 61% of babies are born out of wedlock. People are not marrying. They are cohabiting. That's what will happen. It is an inevitable result. And what people scoff at is the statement that this will lead directly to polygamy. And I tell you it will, because if marriage is supported by theology and law and precedent and custom, it is secure, it is stable. But if the definition of marriage comes down to some black robe judge's view of it, then there is no way it stays the same, because sooner or later, some judge somewhere, and probably sooner, will say, yeah, it's not fair for these three women to not get the benefits of marriage and to have the domestic benefits that other people have. All one judge has to do, or as we've seen in California, maybe a mayor, or maybe, you know, the commissioners or somebody, it becomes totally unstable. If what you're doing is you're undermining the entire legal foundation for marriage, and it will crumble. That's what's at stake, and this is why we can't just be cavalier about, well, you know, it's all right. What does it hurt me? That's a selfish question. The question is, what does it do to the country, and what does it do to children? I tell you, I feel so strongly about this. We're hearing nothing about the kids. What we're hearing about are the rights of people with same-sex proclivities, and that does not ask the right question. What about the rights of children? What about children who are going to be raised fatherless or with a motherless home? See, you're condemning children to not having either a father or a mother. The social science research is often contradictory and often doesn't make sense. I'll tell you, in this case, there have been more than 10,000 studies that have showed that children do best with a father and a mother, and it is very consistent. And in fact, where children are raised with a committed mother and father, the children are less likely to fail in school or be held back or to drop out. They're less likely to be on drugs. They're less likely to be in poverty. They're less likely to commit suicide. The girls are less likely to get pregnant out of wedlock, and they are more likely to be physically and emotionally healthy. 10,000 studies have showed that. And we're now going to disregard all of that and imply that children can do just as well with a contrived arrangement that was never intended by God. Thirdly, you probably missed the second one, but children was the second one. The third one is that instantly the schools across this country will change. They will have to by law. They will have to treat homosexuality and heterosexuality as moral equivalents. They will not be able to point to morality of any sort. It's the end of morality. And it will also have implications for the textbooks. You know, you can't have pictures or drawings or photographs of a man and woman as a mother and father for little children. You've got to have equal depictions of homosexuals. I mean, imagine starting to teach about homosexual propaganda when a child is in kindergarten. Can you imagine that? That's what happens in California right now. Parents send their little kids off on wobbly legs with a little lunch bag off to school. They don't know nothing about nothing. I mean, they're wet behind the ears. Anything you tell them, they will believe. And that's where in California they start teaching about homosexuality. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine a teacher standing or sitting in the middle of all these little wide-eyed kids all around, and instead of teaching them about fairy stories or the ABCs or numbers, she's talking to them about adult perverse behavior? Can you believe parents in California put up with that? I never would have thought it, and yet it came, and it is now implemented there, and it's coming to your school if you have a kid in a public school. If this happens, everything changes in the schools. I can't talk about them all. Adoption laws change. Foster care laws change. Health insurance. Somebody's got to pay for all those benefits. What's going to happen to the premiums for health care? Social Security. It's already on the ropes. What will happen when you have tens of thousands, maybe millions, of new dependents who are entitled to Social Security? I mean, it touches everything. And I've tried to get into some of it in this book. The one that really concerns me, well, there are two of them really concerns me. One of them is religious freedom, because with this whole concept of homosexual rights comes a whole new definition of what you can do and say in a free society. Now, why I've just gotten distracted as I'm looking at this thing. My time is gone. You didn't give me 20 minutes. How long did you give me? You gave me 4 minutes. What are you trying to do to me? Oh, goodness, I haven't even got... Wrap it up, it says. Ted, can't you do anything with her? Hey, did I really... Have I spoken 15 minutes? Oh, my goodness. You know what, folks? I've never spoken 20 minutes in my whole life. I don't know how to do this. Oh, well, the evangelization of children also worries me and concerns me. I am excited. Why? Because I see a stirring going on. I really do. I see a rumbling from coast to coast. It hasn't reached Washington, D.C. yet, but it's going to. There was an event in Seattle, Washington, just 1 month ago, May 1st, as a matter of fact, of this year. They had 20,000 people on a hot afternoon on a Saturday when people could be going to put their boats in the water or putting their boots on the mountain. And instead, they came to Safeco Field, 20,000 of them. They were on their feet. singing and praying and thanking God for what he's going to do here. There were 8,000 people in San Francisco who rallied. There were 2,000 in San Jose. There were 8,000 10 days ago in Phoenix, Arizona. Portland, Oregon. I was invited there to speak 6 weeks ago. And 1,800 pastors and 400 members of their staff came together on a Monday, which is a day off for many pastors. They came from every county in the state, came together. It's more pastors than have ever been together in that state for a purpose like this. And why were they there? Because of their concern for marriage and the family. I arrived there and was taken to City Bible Church on the night before. And I got there and I met with the pastor and the organizers and others. And they said, there's a prayer meeting going on downstairs. You want to go down there and see it and participate? I said, sure. I went down there thinking that there'd be 25 people on their knees praying about the next day. There were 1,000 people on their feet praying with their hands in the air. So good things are happening, and I believe the Lord is going to do a miracle. I am not going to whine anymore. We're going to count on him. We're going to depend on it. And I am sure you do too. Our congressmen are bailing out. They're run for the tall grass. They're shaking in their boots. They're scared to death of the ACLU. They're scared of the press, of the Washington Post, the New York Times, and people from the American Way. Scares them to death, and they're running. They don't want anything to do with this. For the first time in my life, I was there 2 weeks ago, and Tony and I and Gary Bauer and others tried to see 11 senators. It is the first time I've ever been turned down by a senator. They would not talk to us. They don't want to get near to us because they're scared of this issue. But you all have to convince them that there's something else to be scared of. Some of our own friends are bailing out. Cal Thomas wrote a column on Thursday of this week, and he said, quote, pro-family groups have given it their best shot, and this debate is over. Is this debate over?
No.
Are we going to roll over like whipped puppies?
No.
No, sir. We're going in the strength of the Lord. I got 38 seconds. Hezekiah, great godly king, was inside the walls of his city in Jerusalem. And Sennacherib came with 185,000 people, well-armed troops, to destroy him. They had already destroyed Lachish. They had killed all the people there. And now he came, he stood outside the wall, and he said, your God will not be able to protect you. None of the other gods have. And he mocked God. Hezekiah went to prayer, and he turned to his warriors and his government officials, and he said, with them is an arm of flesh, and with us is the Lord our God. With us is the Lord our God. And I know we're outnumbered. I know all those troops are out there. I know they're threatening. They make fun of us. They call us names. I'm now arch homophobe. I've been called a lot of names. That's a new one. Are we going to cower? No. Because with us is the Lord our God.
Man, Dad, you were on a roll there. Mm-hmm. And as that crowd responded to your talking about the federal marriage amendment, their response was so positive that you left there really optimistic that this was going to pass in Congress, but it didn't. Not only did it not pass, it lost by a wide margin. Yeah. What's the disconnect there?
Well, it's a very, very good question, Ryan, because we got our ears pinned back. We didn't even come close to winning, and so we do have to ask why.
Yeah.
You know, we prayed, we lobbied, we did what we could, and we lost anyway. But there are two reasons for it. First, fighting for a righteous cause is always a struggle.
It is.
William Wilberforce fought in the British Parliament to end the slave trade for 30 long and difficult years. And he went through some horrible experiences, insults and discouragement, one after another, 30 years. Mm-hmm. But he would not give up because his cause was just. Mm-hmm. And I hope it won't take us 30 years to preserve the institution of marriage. But if it does, we're not going to give up. We'll just pass it along to the next generation.
And it'll be your fight, Ryan, along with your contemporaries. Well, and we'll take it because it would be worth it. It would be worth it to protect that.
Well, what we experienced in 2004 was a setback. Let's be honest about that. But it was not a defeat. I thought we were much closer to victory than we turned out to be. But with prayer and the support of people of faith, we will eventually win the battle. Mm-hmm. I still believe that. Now, the second reason that we didn't win in 2004 is because the institution of the family has very little support in Washington. You know, there are powerful lobbyists there for almost every possible interest, including the possum growers of America and all the labor unions and the rest of it. But there's very little support for the American family. Mm-hmm. We're fighting an uphill battle against the courts and liberal politicians and the media and the entertainment industry and Congress itself. They're all aligned against the family. Mm-hmm. And they together make formidable foes. But like William Wilberforce, he hung in there until the job was done, and so will we. And if God be for us, who can be against us?
Boy, that's for sure. Dr. Ryan was talking about the disconnect between what happened back in 04. There's another disconnect right here because Congress and the courts are against us, and yet the American public stands firmly in support of marriage.
They do, Luann, and tomorrow we're going to talk about that. We're going to come back to this subject to make that case that the recent findings from polling data and from 31 states that have voted on the definition of marriage have made that clear. The people are with us. The people are with us. Our politicians are not. And we've got to get their attention. And we won't win this thing until we do.
Well, Doctor, on behalf of so many listening, thank you for your stand. You've always been at the forefront of that issue. It continues today. I hope everyone listening realizes that that will continue to be a huge proclamation here from the microphones at Family Talk.
Well, Luann and Dad, that's part of the reason why I'm here. And I know we're going to do a broadcast like this and we're going to hear back from people and they're going to go, oh, you've gotten too political. What would you like us to give up? You want us to stop fighting for the unborn? You want us to let just innocent babies get killed? You want to let marriage get thrown out the window so it doesn't mean anything and let our country go into ruin because of it? What things would you have us drop? It's not politics. That's biblical truth. And it's something we're going to continue to preach as long as we're able.
Well, I appreciate that, Ryan and Luann, what you said, too. I would just like to add something to that for the benefit of those who've been listening to us and they still believe the fundamentals that I was talking about. They're willing to fight for them. And sometimes I think those folks feel like nobody's speaking for them, that they're the only ones that care. And I really do wish they'd stand with us because, quite frankly, financially, we need all the help we can get. You know, we're still only 1 year and 4 months old, and it takes time as a new organization to get your legs under you, especially when you're starting something with the scope of this ministry. And summertime has been pretty difficult.
Well, Dr. Ryan and I both joined this team for the primary purpose of continuing to be there to hold you up and allow you to continue forth with this message. We have about 20, 25 people on staff as well. We need more. We need the people listening right now to stand alongside us and to partner with us.
Lou Ann, Ryan said this is why he's here. Is this also why you came?
Absolutely, Doctor. Everybody knows I have four children, and I do not want the biblical foundation of this country to die. I don't want that lost for my children and the next generation. And we will stand here, and I think there are thousands, Ryan, who would stand with us, and we hope they will come online and donate to our cause.
Absolutely. And if you want to stand with us in this battle and continue to fight for biblical values in this country, you can start at familytalk.org. There's a donate button right there. You can call us 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
And Ryan, some listeners may have noted that URL is a little different. It's simpler now, familytalk.org. Thanks so much for being with us, and do not, I repeat, do not miss tomorrow's program when we will hear more, Dr. Dobson, of your rallying cry for this fight for traditional marriage. I hope everyone will join us for the next Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.